So, Paul Nicholson, this Sun reporter from the hotline, gave me, he said, you can't, he said, you're going to need some journalist friends over there because they know the nitty-gritty of the cities and they know what's going on more than anybody. So he gave me the name and address, name and telephone number of an Australian reporter that was living over there, who was Hamish McDonald. And he also gave me the name of somebody else, but I never contacted.
Which paper was he was
with? Sydney Morning Herald.
Sydney Morning Herald.
And he was the political correspondent for the Sydney Morning Herald.
How long has he been in TACI?
4 years. So the minute we got there, that's who we were to ring for help. Because then we didn't know what to do. Well, the first thing we did was ring the Australian Embassy to tell them we had arrived, and they just freaked and said, what are you doing here? We thought that they had done, they told us they had done so much investigation, but they hadn't done a thing. They hadn't, not a thing. Oh, yes, that's right, Riddell case. Oh, yes, you know.
They hadn't
done a thing, but they snapped them to attention when we arrived. They knew we meant business and that I wasn't going to let it drop. And they advised me to get a private detective. They said that you've got to get a private detective. And also get onto as many reporters as you can who might know the group. If you can find that the group might be in this city, you know, then you're stepping stone. So the next day was a public holiday.
How old is Hamish McDonald? Is he a middle-aged man?
34.
And he's got a wife.
Wife and two children.
Two children. The boy and a girl?
Boy and a girl, four and eight. So then we rang Hamish straight away. The next day was a public holiday, and he was in Korea, so that we had to wait another day. And we rang him at the phone.
Where did you stay?
We stayed in a hotel. Both stayed in a hotel for 10 days, and it was so expensive. I mean, Japan is just so expensive. And so we rang him at the Foreign Press Club. We had a work and a home number, and his wife told us he was at the Foreign Press Club. So we rang in there. Tried to explain who we were. He didn't know who we were. We just, you know, he said, look, I think the best thing is just come and meet me here. So we met him and told him the whole thing. I was pleading for help. And he virtually just threw his hands up and said, look, I can't, there's nothing I can do. I'll do my best to try and find something, but I can't guarantee anything anyway. So he tried to dig up as much as he could about any sort of cult, and he didn't, there was nothing he knew about, in nothing, no such thing.
So they'd kept very low profile.
Yeah, they had. And then the next day, this big article came out in a magazine called Focus of the Children of God. It was a great big spread on the Children of God,
in
Tokyo. It was a very old article because it had been bandied around before. I'd seen it years before. But the fact that, this article came out, so then we tried to get onto the reporter that wrote this article, and he suddenly chucked off to England. So that sort of was a bit of a flop, but we knew that something was stirring a bit within. They must have been around for that report to come out in the first place.
So was it a pro Children of God article or an anti-Children?
Anti.
An anti. Yes.
So anyway, then Hamish suggested the same. He said the only help he could give us was to put us on to a good private detective. That was the only thing he could come up with in order to help us, which he did. And he said what he'd do, he'd give us his secretary, who was Japanese, American-Japanese. She was Japanese, but she spoke fluent American. And she'd lived there for 6 years. And he would lend us, her name was Hiroko, he'd lend us Hiroko to take us to the private detective. Yeah, she was 25, really lovely, lovely, lovely girl. She was with me right up until the end, with Chase and everything. And you know, she'd take us to the private, if we paid her a little bit of money, she'd take us to the private detective because we didn't know the way around, and sit there and translate because this private detective couldn't speak a word of English. I'd have to speak when she'd have to speak, and it was a very long process. So I paid the private detective $1,000 to start with. No, $500 to start with, and that $500 was to ascertain whether he had arrived in the country. That was what $500 was for, and that was the only $1,000 for that information. I didn't get that information for 8 days after I'd been there. She said she had a lot of contacts with the immigration department. Anyway, she finally gave me the information. Yes, he had arrived in the country.
The detective was a
woman.
A woman?
Yeah.
Nice. And young woman?
Young woman, 30. Nice. Slight, really slight, and nice. She wouldn't pick up a private detective at all.
So then you knew he was in the country, and what did you do then? Just sort of...
He said, okay, well, can you try and, find out what he's... Well, she said, now the next step is, another $500, please. The next step is, we'll have to she'll have to get her immigration contact and find out what address he's put on his disembarkation card at the airport and what he'd written on his visa.
Mm-hmm.
Which she also found out for me. He didn't put any address down. He wrote Tokyo, City of Tokyo.
Oh.
They let him get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing was what he put on his visa application. She told me his visa expired on the 21st of November. She told me it was a 60-day visa he was on. So what I had to do was to wait another 3 weeks. I would have had to have waited.
Mm.
Graham by this stage had to go home. He had to leave and get back to Australia.
Mm.
She told me I had to wait.
And Hamish taken you into his home.
Sort of developed a firm friendship then. Mm. He invited us over for dinner and we'd taken him out for dinner, and he started getting closely involved too.
Mm.
We were Australian. His boss lives down the road, and he lives at Palm Beach, and
he sort of took you under his wing.
And us being Australian, it was good for them, I think, too.
Yes.
But he did. He really took an interest.
Right. Now you waited for the 60 days for him to renew the visa, and he didn't.
It was 60 days from the date he arrived, which was the 21st.
Mm.
So it was from the 21st of October, November, December. I had till the 21st of December. That's 60 days, isn't it? 21st of October to the 21st of December. Well, 19th of December or something.
Yes, round about.
And she said what I had to do was to go in disguised or with the private detective and sit and wait. He had a limit of 2 weeks to renew his visa, otherwise he'd be kicked out of the country.
Mm.
And I have to sit in and just wait every day for 2 weeks in the immigration department and watch for him to come in and renew.
And did you do this?
No, got close to the date, and we were starting to... we decided that I wasn't going to sit in there, it was too much of a risk.
Mm.
And the immigration department were going to contact the private detective when he came in.
Mm.
And he never came in, and we said, what's happening? And the Australian embassy then started getting involved, and they found out through their own contacts and said he's not on a 6 day, he's on a 90 day. She'd made a mistake. So I thought, well, I've been here this long, I may as well wait another month. So that was my waiting period, that whole month of just waiting.
What did you sort of think you could do
in that time? I got quite closely involved with the police over there.
Mm-hmm.
They said they wouldn't help in any way at all, because Peter had committed no crime in that country. He was on a valid passport.
Mm.
Or even though our Australian government had cancelled his passport, until that passport was actually taken out of his hand and stamped cancelled, he was quite legally allowed to stay in that country.
Mm.
And the fact that I'd obtained custody after the horse had bolted, he didn't go in contempt of court or, didn't kidnap my child. It was his child as well.
Mm.
So I had a lot of...
Mm.
But
how about the forgery on the visa?
The forgery was a crime in Australia, not in Japan. And it was just not... He said unless he was a drugger...
No reciprocal
arrangement between Japan and Australia. Unless he was a murderer or smuggling drugs.
Mm.
It was a domestic, they said.
Yes.
But I told them, a man called Mr. Agumi, who was crime prevention squad, I got quite friendly with him, and he took pity on me because of my circumstances and telling him all. roused interest with them, told them all about the prostitution. And so he said, okay, you tell me about what you know about them and we'll do what we can under you know, as much as we can, you know, if you help us. So I told him all about the prostitution and where and what sort of things they do and where they sort of would hang out and what sort of hotels they'd go to pick up men and that sort of thing. There was nothing they could... It was like...
Where did they practice this prostitution? In rented rooms? Or
They usually
would rent?
No, they go to big hotels like Hilton and Sheraton and...
But would the family pay for that?
The man would pay for it. Yeah. Or they'd go to big hotels where businessmen would be staying and would go up to their rooms.
So then, right, you waited for another 30 days and then came the date, this was the 20th of January, it must have been.
We didn't wait for that long. We then got word 2 weeks before, or 2.5 weeks before that date, that he'd fronted up to Immigration Department to put in an application to renew his visa.
This was two and a half weeks before
the 21st, so he was getting his chop in early because he wanted to do the right thing. He'd been there all that time and he was feeling pretty safe, I think. Before all this, the private detective was getting very slack. She wouldn't do anything. She was, not following up anything or wanting to do anything. We'd found children required busking in certain subways and she wouldn't follow them up or anything like that. I'd written a fake letter to a piece of literature.
So she took $1,000 really for nothing.
Yeah,
that was all you paid her.
Yep.
And did you discharge her?
$1,000. No. She then rang me just before I found out that he was still in the country, because there was always the fear that he'd left the country. Although we requested watches on Hong Kong Airport, Indian Airport, Bombay, New Delhi, Narita, and all the airports in Japan, there was no guarantee that they would be picked
through.
Now,
well, we better press on because we don't want to run out of tape. Right, now you came. It came to the Friday, the 20th of January, must have been.
I was back on the 14th of January.
Was it the Friday?
I came back on the
14th
of January.
So it must have been Friday the 13th, June 15th.
Friday the 13th.
Hey, come on, you can never say that sound like that. What happened on Friday the 13th?
Well, the week before you, that was the Friday on the Monday, or the Wednesday, or the Tuesday, or something, the beginning of the week. We found out he was in the country, Philip Kentwell from the Australian Embassy, who had really, really taken such an interest and was working day and night to help me.
Philip Kentwell.
Some person at immigration had told Philip Kentwell Peter's address. Now, we didn't know whether that was his guarantor for his visa application, whether it was just a fake address, or whether it was his real one, but it was our only chance. And it was the first concrete thing we'd gotten. So then the next day, the next night, Rosemary and Hamish went out in the car. It was a 4-hour drive. They went out to suss out the place, this address, which was 4 hours away.
But in the suburbs of Tokyo?
On the fringes
of Tokyo.
It was out of Tokyo. It was another prefecture anyway. It was a long, long way away. And they saw the house and everything and you know, they just said it's a big house and it's in a lovely area. No Europeans around, no foreigners around. So then the next day they got Hamish started strangling my private detective and said, no, you've got to do something, you've got to find out who's living in the house and find out from neighbours who exactly is living in this house. You've got to find out whether Peter's there. So then she and another private detective would spent 2 nights up in trees and rustling in bushes and taking photographs, peering through binoculars through the windows, trying to find out who was living in the house. And we then found out there were about 10 foreigners living there with small children, and I knew that it was, if it wasn't Peter, it was the family. It was stepping stone to peace, yes. Because it would have had some sort of connection if he'd given that address. So then she fell out of a tree, and they heard her and came rushing out and started looking around, and they started getting really suspicious. And they came back and said, "They're getting suspicious, they've caught me." Well, they didn't actually caught her, she ran off in the dark. And so we knew that we just had to just to make a move. So
she'd shown the photographs to the neighbours.
She'd shown the photographs to the neighbours. No. Said, "Do you recognise this baby? Do you recognise this man?" They said, "Yes, we think so. There's a lot of little blonde kids living in there. Yes, I think they all look the same." Which I thought was really they all look the same. So anyway, they just grew up. They said that, you know, they've got quite a few cars in there and a big van and all sorts of things. So. And always a lot of music coming from the house, and I knew that it was a family house home.
Okay, speak up.
So anyway, I'd had my bags packed, sort of from the time I knew he'd renewed his visa application. Hamish had made me keep my bags packed for all that time, just in case anything happened. So then on Friday, he said, "Okay, we'll go and sit and wait outside the house." There was a big park nearby. We knew that because one of the neighbours said that they take the children out to the park at a certain time of the day. So we wanted to go to this park, which was just across the road from the house, and just wait, because Peter would always take them to the park to get him out. So I packed my bags, packed the little bags with Stephen. Everybody rallied round. The whole neighbourhood, the whole of Tokyo knew about it, and everyone was fingers crossed, and you know. And so then I went. We all had to go heavily disguised because we were in an area where there were no foreigners at all, except for these people in this house. We'd be noticed. Had dark glasses, big trench coat, black boots, trousers, and my hair all tucked up into this big black hat. So I looked like a man. And Rosemary had bright red hair, so she had to disguise hers as well. And Hamish and Hiroko came as well. Hamish and Hiroko just completely didn't go to work all week. He just had to, you know, make excuses to his work all the time, stories and things. Anyway, so we waited and we watched for 5 hours, sitting in this car park watching the house. Hiroko, being our decoy, being Japanese, we sent her walking up and down the street all day. We drove around, and all of a sudden we saw a car pulling out of the driveway. We chased it, Rosemary and I. We saw it. Hamish was driving off somewhere else, and we saw it. So we followed the van. We had two cars. We hired one, and we had a friend's because they didn't have a car. And we were in a little Mitsubishi, and we followed this big green van full of people, full of kids, blonde kids, that heads were sticking out the window. They went up to the station, and someone else was driving the van. They all dropped these people off at the station with their guitar cases and suitcases, and Rosemary said, "That's him, there he is." So we rushed up to these people. We were about that far away from them, and we realised it wasn't them, but the other people that were living in the house. So we ran and had to jump down a 6-foot fence, and in case they saw us, but they fortunately didn't see us, because I ripped my hat off at the stage, ready to grab Stephen, but they weren't there. So we went back and just watched again. Came to about 6 o'clock in the evening, and Hamish said, "If we haven't seen anything in about 15 minutes, we're going to have to go and call it a day and come back tomorrow, because it's going to be too dark to see anything. There were no lights or anything like that." Anyway, so he said, we'll drive up next to the house one more time and see if we can see anything through the windows, because we had to be careful. Everything was so open, and they would have seen it. They just had been so suspicious.
It was set in big grounds, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was quite a house, actually. Mm. So we went, we drove up one more time, and just as we got near the house, the same green van pulled out of the driveway, obviously dropping more people up at the station. People were leaving the house because they knew there was trouble brewing. They knew that people were watching, and apparently the police had been on their back as well, from me telling them about the prostitution and everything. They'd gotten the same contacts from immigration of his address and his name, and the whole thing was, you know. So anyway, we couldn't see who was driving the van. It was very dark. We got up to the station again, and Hamish said, I was laying on the back seat with a blanket over me, and Hamish said, "Okay, if it's Pete in the front, I think it is. And I looked up and there he was, sitting at the driver's seat, saying, see you later, mate, to this guy that he dropped off at the station. And I said, it's him, screaming, it's him. Stephen must be in the house. He's there, I've got him, he's there. Mm. So then Peter turned around and drove down and he stopped at the shops. Mm. And Hamish pulled up behind him and I said, what are you doing? Get ahead of him and we've got to beat him back to the house. He stopped at the shop to get something. And I said, we've got to beat him back to the house and I've got to just run in there and grab Stephen. I said, we know a lot of people have left the house, so there mustn't be that many left in there. So then we sped back to the house. Hamish dropped me off. He said, have you got the custody papers? And I said, no, I haven't. I said, they're in the other car. And he said, I'll drive back and get them. We weren't thinking straight, it was happening so fast, but we knew if we had them with Hamish next to me, Peter wouldn't know who Hamish was. He could have been anyone, you know, a policeman or anything. So Hamish went back to get the custody papers and I just ran in and Hamish said, think about it, Julie, don't rush in. It's my only chance in my life to get Stephen back and I know he's in there and I've just got to go in and suffer any consequences and just go in and grab him. So I just walked up the driveway. I knew the doors would be open and I knew if I just walked in they'd be expecting it to be Peter, whoever was in there looking after Stephen. Opened the first door, looked at all the shoes sitting on the, because you know, take your shoes off, saw the shoes in there. Opened the second door, walked straight into the lounge room, saw Stephen standing at the end of the lounge room with two Japanese women standing beside him and a whole lot of Japanese kids. And just said, Stephen, and he just started to scream at this stage. I just ran and grabbed him and just ran out the door. And I had both of the women on me, one on my back, one on my leg, and I was just running down the driveway screaming, Hamish, where are you? His car was supposed to be out there waiting for me, and there was nobody there. I was just there on my own in a dark alley, which it was a dark alley. And like a laneway coming up to his place. And then all of a sudden I was running up the street coming into the open and Peter was coming towards me like this in the van. Mm-hmm. And he just stopped me like that. I was cornered. He jumped out of the van and the look on his face, blood drained from his face. Mm-hmm. And he just said, give him back to me right now. And I just had Stephen so tight, still running, still kicking these women off me, kicking them as hard as I could. And Peter was, you know, breaking my fingers off one by one, and I was just about to lose my grip, and Hamish drove up and jumped out of the car and said, take your hands off that child right now. And Peter just dropped his hands like that. I mean, he didn't know whether Hamish had a gun or whether it was a police force. And then Hamish started to try to reason with him and explained, and so with this I just jumped in the car, locked all the doors, and Stephen was screaming his head off, screaming daddy daddy, and calling out to one of these Japanese women, mummy mummy, and she was clawing at the car trying to get to him.
You were in the car on your
own. I was in the car on my own, but I'd locked all the doors, and Hamish and Pete were standing outside the car talking, and he's saying, what's going on, you know, what's going on? And Hamish said, you know, because Hamish didn't have the custody papers, he couldn't find Rosemary, she'd gone off driving somewhere. So anyway, Hamish said, okay, look, we've got to be fair about this. You come with me in the car, Julie and I in the car, we'll go to the other car, meet Hamish, meet Rosemary, and we'll show you the custody papers. We'll show you that your passport's been cancelled, that you have not got custody of this child anymore, and that Julie takes the child home. And Peter said, fine, okay. He was very calm, very passive. So we got to the car park, which was our meeting place, and about halfway.
Oh, good.
And you took me 100 miles an
hour. I'm reliving
that. So am I. Yeah. And we got to the car park and Rosemary and Hiroko were sitting in the car and I had Stephen in my arms and Pete was sitting in the back seat, mind you, and I'm like this, gripping him like this.
You were in the front.
I was in the front and Pete saying, just let me hold him, just give him to me for 5 minutes to calm him down, and I said, I'm not touching him, never touching him. And then I knew I had to get back into that other car where my suitcase was in the other car, and I slowly lifted the door handle and slowly sidled my way out of the car, and Peter said, grab me, he said, where do you think you're going? I said, I've got to get Stephen out of this, I've got to get him out into the fresh air. And he was saying, it's freezing cold, you can't take him out there. house, you know. And then I just ran and just jumped in the other car and I said, Rosemary, lock all the doors and go, just get to the airport. With Hamish and Peter still standing out there like this, with Peter with the custody papers in his hand. And as we started to drive off, the custody papers went everywhere and Peter then jumped on top of the car just to stop us. So we drove and we drove, we were going up one-way streets the wrong way with Peter. First of all, he was hanging on the side, on my side, on my window side. Then he climbed his way up onto the top and was bashing on the windscreen, bashing on the sides. We were going as fast as we could. And then Rosemary said, we've got to just get to a police station now. That's all we can do. She's saying, we can't drive to the airport. Was an hour's drive along the freeway. She said, we can't go to the airport with him on the car. And she's saying, oh, God, I don't want to kill him. We were swerving. We were in the marketplace and we were swerving chooks. And anyway, then all of a sudden he fell off. We didn't know he'd fallen off. And we drove up to the police station. And we're tooting the horn. They're called the Coban. And they're like little... They've got them everywhere, on more or less every corner of the street. Little portable police stations. Mm-hmm. With sophisticated equipment inside them, but they're just so efficient, the police force over there. And we're tooting and tooting, and they came rushing out and said, what's wrong? We're saying there's a madman on top of the car. You know, she's speaking as much Japanese as she could. And, of course, he'd fallen off halfway down the street, and they didn't know what we were talking about. So we all got hauled in. The next thing, Hamish and Hiroko drove up. They assumed that's where we would have gone. We all got hauled in there. And I'd also booked a flight. I'd also booked a flight for that night for 9:32 or something like that. And, which I was booking a flight every night every and cancelling every day and then booking again and cancelling, booking, cancelling. Because it was a bad time of the year to be going anywhere. So then we all got hauled into the police station. What's this all about? They didn't know anything about it. I was going to be up for kidnap. Rosemary was going to be up for culpable driving. They wanted to contact Peter. They wanted to go and get Peter to give for Peter to give me permission to take Stephen out of the country. They wanted us to go to the courts for a custody case. You've got no idea. We were lucky to get out of there alive. Then we tried to contact Philip Kentwell of the Australian Embassy to confirm it. And he'd already gone to the airport to meet us because we'd told him that, you know. He got a message that, he hadn't gone to the airport to meet us because we hadn't arranged it before. But the Australian, the police rang him and said, you know, what's happening? And he said, and he confirmed the whole thing, and he said, well, we need your confirmation in writing. Can you please come to the Coban and please show us who you are and what all this is about? But instead of coming to the Coban, he went to the airport. The wires got crossed and he went out to the airport. So we were waiting and waiting and waiting for Philip Kentwell to turn up to confirm it or to confirm the story. And he never turned up. Next thing, Philip rang and said, where are you? And we said, where are you? Anyway, they said, in the end, the police just said, look, just get out of here, we can't cope. They've never had anything like this. So nothing ever happens over there like that. Foreigners screaming and white babies screaming. And
I can imagine.
It was just dreadful. They were giving him rice crackers and all. No idea. And he said, okay, you can go. And we just went, yay! And we just ran out the door and jumped in our cars. We looked at our watches. We had about 30 minutes to get to the airport to meet this connecting flight. And Philip rang again and we said, we're on our way. Hold the plane. So we drove and then we got out to the airport. I'd missed the plane, but they got me onto another plane. They literally just picked me up and carried me. You know, I had about 50 officials around me and that was the end. That was the end of the story.
Hamish, of course, rang you after the pain was in the air, told it yes, and then Joan rang me. What a great excitement. Right, Nan, when you got back here on the Saturday night, that would have been the Saturday the 14th.
Yeah.
Now, Stephen was then about 20 months old, and maybe 17 months when you said that to her. Now, then, following just a little prologue, Peter was he arrested back in Tokyo and deported to Australia?
Yeah, that's right.
How did that come about?
Philip Kentwell went round to his place and confirmed everything. Yes,
went round to the police.
No, went round to Peter's place. whole thing. Yes, your passport has been cancelled. Please hand it over. To the custody of the child, blah, blah, blah.
So was Peter very bitter or very angry?
No, he was very calm and very passive.
He looked like that anyway, because that sort of person is very quiet, very
gosh.
Now, I understand.
And he said he was coming back to Australia to fight custody.
Well, he was deported, wasn't he, back to Australia then?
Yeah.
And he was, arrested at the airport?
At the airport, yeah.
And charged with
forgery.
Forging an artery.
That's right, yep.
And fined $1,500.
That's right.
Good. Now, do you know if he's paid that or...
He's still paying it.
He's paying
it. He's got 3 months to pay it off and he's still paying it off.
Three months
is up, you know, pretty soon.
Now, he's living by himself or still is he
living
with the family?
He's living with the family.
With the family, somewhere in Sydney.
Yep.
You don't know.
Bondi.
At Bondi.
That's what he tells me.
Yes. And he's not he must be working if he's...
I don't know. He told me he was singing in restaurants part-time and busking every day.
And he's been in contact with you by phone, but you
haven't... Several times, yeah.
Yes. And what's his attitude? Is he sort of repentant for what he did?
No, not at all. He said he took a chance and... He said he's accepted totally that he hasn't got Stephen anymore, but
he's going to get on with God's work. The court has ruled that he's not deceived.
He got his own solicitor to try and get access of custody, and his own solicitor said, "Don't bother, mate. You haven't got a hope."
So the courts have given you custody,
sole custody,
and he has been told he's not allowed to see the child.
That's right.
Is he really paying your bills, isn't he?
Yeah.
And is he not to see you?
Nope. I can get a restraining order, but it's not really necessary.
I see. And he's asked you now for a divorce, hasn't he? You're going to take out divorce proceedings.
He was agreeable to a divorce because... He said, "What's happening about a divorce?" And I said, "Well, I want one." And he said, "So do I." And he implied to me that he wanted a divorce so he could get married again, which they do. They marry so they can stay in the country of their choice. They can marry the native of the country, so they can stay in in the family, of course, and stay in the country. Without having to worry about visas and things like that.
So do you think will he go back to Tokyo?
I'm not saying Tokyo, I don't know.
He'll go out of the country.
He wants to go somewhere, he says.
There's no restriction on him from the courts about leaving again.
Well, he did get his passport confiscated.
Yes.
And Stephen's completely taken off his. And of course, Stephen was endorsed onto mine, which I forgot to tell you about the passport office. They gave him put him on my passport very early, before I left and everything.
Before you left here?
Yes, just before I left.
I think that's about the lot, isn't it? You're going to... you can't, of course, apply for divorce until you've been 12 months separated.
That's right.
So that'll be about next October.
Yeah.
Okay, well... Not interested at all.
But what I really want you to do is, of course you'll be overplaying the whole thing,
I don't think I need to overplay it.
But like stress of what Hamish and Hiroko and Rosemary, how that at the end, how they helped me. I couldn't have done it without them.
Yes.
They put their necks on, and Philip as well put their jobs and necks on the line. For me, and we could have all been arrested. And
yes, but now you don't want me to use his correct name or anything, do you? I think that's... Well, can we stop this down?
Yeah.
Is that stopped?